RunDNA has an incredible range of running and walking footwear, apparel and accessories, catering for anyone who is looking for the right shoe and fit. They're trusted by podiatrists and physiotherapists right across Adelaide. The RunDNA fitter's advice is second to none. So if it's time for new walkers or runners, you can find RunDNA, 20 Manton Street, Hindmarsh, or the other location, 391 Fullerton Road at Fullerton. Both stores open 7 days a week, plenty of off-street parking. You can find them online as well, rundna.com.au. If you run or walk, then you need to RunDNA.
It's the 3rd of July. This is Hooked on Sport. I'm Wallace Long, and welcome to Ben Hook.
Wallace Long, good morning. Great to be chatting.
Mate, great to see you. How's your week been?
Yeah, great. Had a great time. Got a round of golf in Monday, which is really unusual for me. I imagine you were out on the course yesterday. And I'm heading towards about 5 weeks of annual leave, Wallace. So, you know, just that cloud of stress that I can just feel it lifting off me as I've got about 3 shifts left. So it's just magnificent, mate.
Fantastic. Now, you've got a local story of the week that you want to share.
Well, I don't have one. I've got three, so I'm going to keep them really short and sharp. Here's the podium. I just want to point out what's going on in Division 5 of the Adelaide Footy League at the moment. It's been dominated by a club called Marion. Their average winning margin is 68 points, Wallace, a bit over 11 goals. That's not too bad. And it's put the competition in such an uneven kilter that right now 8 of the 10 teams should have a percentage below 50, which, I mean, if you think about percentage, generally there should be five teams above 50, five times below. We've got 8 teams that would be below 50% if it wasn't for the fact that Greenacres played Paraka, second versus third. Greenacres lost by 2 points, but they played an ineligible player, and so they had their score scrubbed, which pushed Paraka's percentage from 48 up above 50, the only reason why they don't have a percentage in the 40s as well. So Marion, percentage of 70, 68 point average winning margin. You think they're going to win that by the length of the straight, that competition. But so that is a watch. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that one plays out. Story number two, I love this one. Glenelg Golf Club, who've been very good friends of our podcast, Wallace. We caught up with them when they did the double for the pennant competition, both the Simpson and the Sanderson Cup. They're in donation mode at the moment, mate. They've done a massive course redevelopment that we're aware of. And their old greens, rather than just pick them up and toss them out or plant them in another part of the ground, they donate them to Tier 2, Tier 3 clubs. So last year, they sent their 15th green to Mawson Lakes Golf Club. And in the last couple of weeks, they've sent their 7th green to Tanunda Pines. So Tim Warren, who's the head of the Glenelg maintenance team and the club itself, congratulations, you're doing amazing work. Last story I want to share with you. Another great friend of mine, Alex Hayden, won the Squash Australia National Championships last week. So this is a bit different to the Australian Open, which has international players. The National Championships is only for Australians. She won the women's division. And who won the men's division? Her partner, Joe White. So it's a cute little story that the couple that are now living in the US and playing professionally squash together went one-on-one in the men's and women's sections of the Australian National Championships last week up there in Queensland. So just incidentally, here's a cool little story as well. In squash, the number one player in Adelaide for males is a 52-year-old named Jason Mudge. I went to school with Jason, so I always knew he was a pretty good squash player, but he is still the number one player in the state, age 52. Not bad.
Brilliant. Probably wins the seniors as well, I'd imagine.
He's claiming a fair few trophies over the course of the year. They play about 3 or 4 seasons as well, squash. They have their normal pennant season, then they have their autumn pennant, their winter pennant, and so on and so forth. So, yeah, Mudgee would have a pretty big trophy cabinet, I suspect.
So it goes the whole year round. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, but they only have shortish competitions, a bit like pennant golf. It might be a 9-week season, but they'll play 3 or 4 of them over the course of the year.
Brilliant. Should we get on to Fair or Farce?
Well, I think we should.
Brendan Favola playing country footy is good for the game. Fair or farce?
What do you think? I'm going to ask you first. What do you think?
I saw the footy and I've got to say it's a farce. It just reminds me of, was it Dermot Brereton who actually had the video cameras and Reece Jones, was it? No,
David Reece Jones.
David Reece Jones. they were playing and they had to have the cameras on. And I think Dermot was a bit concerned he was going to get hit.
Well, that was David Rhys-Jones' usual mode of operation in his day. Belting blokes was certainly one of his leading skills in footy. I agree. I think this is a farce. God, I'm tired of this, Wallace. Retired star plays one game as a cash grab under the guise of helping community footy. Give me a spell. There's the obligatory fight, or what we often see is this supposed star player who's in no fit state to be jumping onto a football field these days, hobbles off after 5 minutes. I don't know. I just don't like it. I think that makes the club look desperate. I think it makes the league look amateur and a bit childish. And the player looks like a caricature of his former self. I mean, Fev's running out there. He's probably 15, 20 kilos overweight. I just reckon if you're going to play in those sorts of things, how about preparing properly? How about getting fit? How about demonstrating to the young kids what you can achieve if you're prepared to commit yourself to the sport and see where you want to go with it? And instead we get these overweight, out of shape, zero condition, yesterday's men stepping out in pursuit of this, I don't know, cheap faux glory. And then, of course, you get the inevitable knucklehead in the other club who wants to start a fight with him. So I don't know. I just reckon, look, a few clubs might make some money out of it with gate takings and over the bar that night with the inevitable speakers night. But I just feel like it's a bit of a pointer to what's really bad about professional footy rather than what's really good about it. And I'd love to see a better example. I think there's room for this, but I'd love to see someone go around and play seven or eight games for seven or eight different clubs in seven or eight different leagues. But do it where you're fit and you're actually going to go up forward, Fev, and kick six or seven for this team and have a big day out. I think that's what that would attract the fans, if you ask me.
Or they could have all the lads that have finished for a year out of footy, they could go and do like a Harlem Globetrotters event all around the state.
See, I think there's merit in that, but I actually want to see guys who are still around the peak of their game. They're obviously going to be a little bit off speed, but I don't need to see 45-year-old blokes who are 110 kilos getting in pushing shoves with the local farmer.
Richmond should be penalised for enabling the behaviour of Tom Lynch, fair or farce?
I'm really hot on this. I think this is fair. I think the victim blaming of Jordan Butts, who was the bloke who got belted in that scene on Sunday afternoon, I found that as infuriating as the coward punch itself. And that's what it was. It was a coward punch. But in the post-match, both player and his coach, Adam Muse, were grizzling about Jordan Butts' method of defence. It was almost like Jordan Butts deserved it. He got what was coming to him. And they never actually said that. And of course, they were saying there was no excuse for the behaviour. But I mean, and I watched a fair bit of that game, and then I was spending a bit of time watching the TV review shows afterwards, and they had no reason to complain about the way Jordan Butts defended. He defended strongly, but he was clean. He did his job to the letter, and in the end, he was the one under scrutiny more than Tom Lynch himself. I was really disappointed by this. And you know what I'm actually looking forward to now, Wallace, is seeing how much whistle Jordan Butts gets this coming Sunday when the Crows host Melbourne. We're not a betting podcast, of course, but I would put the line at about 5.5, plus or minus 5.5. I reckon that's about how many free kicks he's going to give away just because the umpires will absolutely be red hot on him. I just reckon it was really disappointing the way Richmond just were determined to point the finger of blame away from the guy who absolutely let them down and at the guy who was doing his job and copped what he never, ever deserved. So, yeah, Richmond should get a talking to from the AFL about the way they handled it, if you ask me.
Side question on this one. Do you think that the coach missed an opportunity to pull Lynch off early?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I do think that he's an experienced footballer and he should be able to handle these sorts of things. But at the same time, he was clearly showing signs that he was frustrated and things were going to explode. And that was... it was a poor miss by his coach not to at least address it with him and just get him off the field early on and say, hey, how are we going here? It looks like you are not really with us. Because that team needs him to be leading and setting an example, not frustrated, swinging at players, arguing with umpires and letting his teammates down. It's the best thing for the football club that he's having 5 weeks off. In fact, I would probably be thinking right now with Tom Lynch, what have they got, 8 games left? He's going to miss 5. I'd only let him play one more. You get a farewell game, mate, and that's it. You're done with us because you are letting us down in far greater capacity than you are helping us.
AFL football needs a wild card round, fair or farce?
I'm fair on this. And I reckon this is one of those issues that not a lot of people who love their footy can really get their head around. But right now in the AFL competition, we've got 2 9-team divisions. So we've got 9 teams that are kind of challenging for a flag and the other 9 that are really out in the ether, in the abstract, kind of building a list. And if you look at the way it's structured at the moment, Wallace, we've got older teams that are successful and younger teams that are still biding their time. Number 1 ranked team is Collingwood. They're the oldest list in the competition. Number 2 ranked team is Brisbane. They're the second oldest team in the competition. Number 4 ranked team is Geelong. They're the 4th oldest team in the competition. So we've got all of these old clubs out there that are successful and the rest are just waiting for maturity to happen. And I think that they're happy to keep biding their time, find their draft picks, wait until they can really hit the competition hard when they've got their group together, probably a little bit like what the Adelaide Crows have done this year. So I ask you this, Wallace, and I really want your opinion the other way. Imagine if we had a final 10. Now, a final 10 does reward mediocrity, but let's have a think about this. GWS would be a lock for finals, right? They're 3 games clear of anyone who could knock them out of 10th spot. They're the team currently in 9th. So they're playing finals. And I think most people would say, yeah, they're going to do some damage in finals. Port would be 10th. Carlton, Sydney and Essendon would all be a game out of finals. Essendon with a game in hand. So 13th, which is Essendon, is a live final shot right now. And I think it changes the whole narrative of the competition. I mean, you think about the way people view those teams at the moment, Carlton, Sydney, Essendon, Port Adelaide, and all of them are, well, they're washed up, they're done, forget about them. There's problems at Carlton, Port Adelaide are changing their coach. There's massive problems with the football department at Essendon. Sydney have had injuries. Maybe they're going to turn it around, but there's huge question marks over Dean Cox. I mean, could Sydney get a run on with a final 10? Could Port Adelaide get a run on with a final 10? We know their quality. They were preliminary finalists last year. Could the doom scenario at Carlton be replaced with a bit of hope if they can find some form between now and the next 8 weeks of the season, fall into 10th and then pick off a scalp when they play the 7th ranked team? I think there is so much upside in a final 10 over and above the fact that it does reward mediocrity. I think it's also great for fans that you stay alive a little bit longer. What I don't want to see, Wallace, is a competition where we routinely have 6 sides that aren't really trying because they know that the final 8 really is beyond them for a year or 2 or 3. I'd prefer to see a final 10 where everyone feels like, oh, you know what? If we have a good 5 weeks, if we fall into 10th, then have a good 5 weeks, who knows? We might be able to make it to a preliminary final, and that would make an ordinary season a really successful one.
Yeah, I agree with you. It works really well with the Major League Baseball, keeps everybody interested, and it makes them play right to the end of the season if they've got a chance.
I've got a name for it as well because I don't love wild card round. I was having a think about this before. How about the admission finals? If you win, you're admitted into the final 8. The admission finals. There you are, AFL. You can have that one for free.
I think that's about all it's worth, Hookie. Australian tennis is in good shape. Fair or farce?
Farce. Never been in worse shape. I don't know if you've been watching much Wimbledon over the last few days. There were 9 men in the first round of Wimbledon. 4 of them got through. Alex de Minaur, Rinky Hijikata, Jordan Thompson, Alex Vucic. 1 woman out of 6 got through in the women's draw. And she was Russian 3 months ago. Daria Kazatkina, who's just turned to become an Australian, changed her nationality. So we're having an awful record at the moment. Alex de Minaur, look, we love him. He's ranked 11, but he looks further away than ever from winning a slam, doesn't he? I mean, he's a very, very good player who really does struggle when it gets to the pointy end of competitions. And then everyone else who was in either of those major draws, quite frankly, just looked like field fillers. None of them you think are going to be ever going to be doing a lot of damage. I'm interested to watch Maya Joint. She won in Eastbourne last week, and so she might have a future. The youngster bounced out in the first round. But yeah, gee, the rest of them just looks a little bit pedestrian at the moment. And it's particularly disappointing because it's at Wimbledon on grass where historically we've been very, very successful. I think Australian tennis is in terrible shape.
Having signed for the Women's Australian Open, the SA government better have a secondary budget for top-line players. Fair or farce?
Yeah, this is fair. And I think when you reflect that the Victorian government has paid the freight for the Men's Australian Open, which is going to Royal Melbourne, and they've forked out the cash for Rory McIlroy. So I think it's incumbent upon South Australia and Golf Australia to find out a way to get some big-name players into the Women's Australian Open. And I'm actually fairly confident that's probably what they're thinking about. I was having a look at the LPGA Tour. They go to Singapore and China in late February, early March. So you're going to have a number of the big-name US players who are going to be over this side of the world in that time zone, in that time frame. So it makes sense. I wouldn't co-sanction. It's already co-sanctioned with the Ladies European Tour. Now, they're all unheard of. I mean, I just was having a look at the order of merit. I think I had to get through 34 players before I found two that weren't Australian that I was aware of. So you've got to go to the US Ladies PGA Tour, but you've got to chase, I reckon these are the big four. Gino Titical, Thailand player. She's been top seven in every one of the five majors. And is probably the next big thing on the LPGA Tour. Was a threat to Minjee Lee for a number of holes going down that final stretch of the PGA Championship that she won. Maya Stark won the US Open on a very, very difficult course, and I want to see her come here and play at Cooyonga and potentially play more Australian events in the coming years. Nelly Korda's the most marketable player on the planet. And then Lydia Ko was the other one, who's the reigning Open champion from St Andrews, a New Zealander who's played here in the past as well and has a great relationship with Adelaide. So I don't know that you want to go to a full field for the women, but I think if you could find 80 or 90 players, sort of almost like a bit of a Masters field, about that type of number, have a cut at about 60, but if you can get maybe three or four of those four names that I shared with you, I reckon it'll be a really, really good event, and it'll be very, very popular as well. My favourite segment of the week is You're the GM, because I love to put you in spots where you've really got to think about things. We're going to talk about Carlton again, Wallace, and I want to reference Brad Lloyd, who is the football boss at Carlton, who decided to do a press conference over the weekend. It was on the basis of the fact that Carlton had yet another devastatingly poor performance against Port Adelaide, their coach under siege. And Brad Lloyd was there supposedly to go into bat for the coach, Michael Voss, and be supportive and provide some real clarity around where the club was at. And I think it was a dismal failure at that press conference. You're the GM, Wallace, of the Carlton Football Club. How would you manage that issue, not just with Brad Lloyd, but with the public itself?
I think they did exactly what they needed to do. It was underwhelming. He was ill-prepared. It was just really disappointing. And I mean, I know a lot of commentators have spoken about it and suggested that it's incumbent on those people to be supportive of their club and their team and to actually have prepared. I just go back to what Nathan Buckley said about the Blues at the moment. And he said, you know, he felt that like they looked rudderless. Well, I can tell you, Brad Lloyd, he looked rudderless. And also, Buckley's also said it looks like there's no clear direction. Well, there was no clear direction in regards to what his position was on anything. So I think the way that Rob Priestley ended up going out to the media, what was it, on Monday? I mean, he had to do it. He had to. And he really did what Brad should have done, or the person in that position should have done. So, you know, I didn't see Brad's interview when it happened, but I've seen it since. But I saw Rob's first up, so I just thought, well, that's a straightforward thing. He sort of had his position. He talked about the fact that they're committed to Voss for his contract. They'll do a review at the end of the season. So everybody had clarity. So when I think about the people around the club, the sponsors, everybody else, and the supporters, I don't know, honestly, what the general manager of football was doing.
Rob Priestley, gee, he saved that from the fire. I mean, the fact that he was just adamant that this is how we're going to deal with it, so let's all move on. We are not going to waste the next 8 weeks. I thought it was superb. And yeah, Brad Lloyd, I reckon that's really difficult for Michael Voss when you just need that extra supportive voice and you just don't have it in that guy at the moment. So Yeah, Graham Wright will be the new CEO. I think August 15 he starts, takes over from Brian Cook. He is going to it's going to be fascinating to see how he handles that football club, because change is coming. It's just going to be the extent to which it's going to land and how quickly it will, because Graham Wright has a great track record of overhauling football clubs and turning them around quickly, but they need an overhaul. Can we wrap it up with some power rankings?
What do you got for this week, Hookie?
Well, I tell you what, there are some big movers. Let's start at number 10. Burnside Hockey Club men's team are in. New entrant into the Hookie's power rankings. They defeated Port Adelaide at Port Adelaide. They go equal top on the men's ladder. And after their recent performances, I have them in at top. They beat, they're level with Burnside, sorry, with they're level with Seacliff now. And they've come from nowhere, because Burnside has really struggled in the last 7 or 8 years. So here they are, back equal top. Burnside at 10th. Contacts at 9th. The reigning champions of the Premier League netball competition. They're a re-entry. They defeated Oakdale last weekend. So they replaced them in the power rankings. Oakdale out, Contacts in. At 8th, Brighton Lacrosse Club. The women, they had a bye, so they stay at 8. At 7th, West Adelaide women's soccer team. They were 5th. So they've dropped a couple of spots. They played a draw. So they've drawn 2 out of their last 3. Their other one was a 7-1 win over Burkella. So they're not going terribly, but they're down to 7th from 5th. The Thunderbirds have climbed to 6th from 10th, Wallace. Had a huge win over the Melbourne Vixens in Melbourne. I reckon they're odds on for finals now. They've got 2 games remaining. How far they go in the finals will be a question, but I reckon they can make it. So they're in 6th. Adelaide Hockey Club, they were 6th. They've jumped up to 5th. This is the women's team. They beat Seacliff at Seacliff. At number 4, they stay at 4, but I've got the Central District Lions, who are my favourite local sports team at the moment. They beat Southern at Southern. They did it without Ebi Adegibi, who's their huge centre who's been scoring all sorts of points. I watched a few highlights of this game. Majok Manyang just stepped up for Central and played one of the most awesome games. I think he had 30 points and 20 rebounds or something like that. So he was just dominant. It was great to watch. Metro Stars, who've been 1 for the last 2 weeks, have dropped down to 3, the National Premier League club, NPL South Australia team. Had a draw on Friday night to Adelaide United. Their lead in the competition is back to 9. I had to drop them down to 3 because I put the Crows up from 3 to 2 with their 68-point win over Richmond. And the new number 1 team in Hookie's power rankings, Wallace, Sturt. They've gone from 2nd to 1st with an 11-0 record and a 124-point win over the Eagles, who are in 5th. So this is a finals team that they've blown away by 17 goals. Quite unbelievable. So the Double Blues go to number 1 in Hookie's power rankings.
Brilliant, Hookie. Now, I think last week at the end of the show, you were telling us about this big run you were going to do. Did you get to it?
Yeah, I did. I did 28 Ks last Thursday. I've got a lighter week this week. I did finish the run, Wallace. I didn't get my fueling at all right. All I did was drink water, which I was told, if you've done 28 Ks and you've only drunk water, no wonder you were struggling at the end. So I did slow down a lot at the end. I went and saw our good friends at Run DNA. I picked up about 20 of those gels that you run with you and you take every half an hour or so. So I've got a 14K run this Friday. I'll do a couple of gels, and then I've got a 32K run the following week, and I'll try, 6 or 7 of the gels then. So I'm really getting to the pointy end now. It's starting to feel like it's real. After a 28K run, man, I struggled. My legs were exhausted. But at the same time, it was heartening to know that I can get that far without really being fully prepared. I've also got to accept that it's only 2/3 of a marathon. I've still got 14 Ks to run. So, but no, really happy and just feel like I'm, building my preparation all the way through. Interestingly enough, the Sunshine Coast Marathon, the ambassador for it is Tara Palm, South Australia's own star runner. She's going to run the half marathon. We had a bit of a back and forth on social media last night, and she did say that after she's finished her run, she'll stick around to cheer me on. And I said, I hope you've got a good book, because you'll be waiting a while for me.
That's brilliant. Awesome, Hookie. Good to chat.
You too, mate. Excellent. Well done. And we'll see you next week. If you're enjoying this podcast, I'd encourage you to take a listen to Beyond the Club. It's a project I've been working on with Flinders University. Now, I co-host it with Professor Sam Elliott, and we break down all the latest research on how to maximise the experience of junior and club athletes. There's a range of resources, special guests, and cutting-edge info on how you can make your club a safer, happier place for your kids and their club mates. Beyond the Club, wherever you get your podcasts.